Today is Friday, October the 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says that Democrats and Republicans have reached a temporary agreement to keep the U.S. from defaulting on its debt.
We have reached agreement to extend the debt ceiling through early December, and it's our hope that we can get this done as soon as today.
And Tanzanian writer Abdul Razak Gana has been awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature.
He has consistently and with great compassion penetrated the effects of colonialism in East Africa.
And in the Philippines, Vice President Leni Robredo has declared that she will run for president next year, joining a crowded field of candidates to succeed populist incumbent President Rodrigo Duterte. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. And for our top story, Senate leaders say they have reached a deal to temporarily avoid a debt crisis. The U.S. Senate will try to pass a stopgap increase in the Treasury Department's $28.4 trillion borrowing authority as lawmakers rush to stem worries about a debt default in less than 2 weeks. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer scheduled up to 4 hours of debate on Thursday on the bill that would raise the debt limit by $480 billion, enough to keep Treasury borrowing and spending through at least early December. AP Washington correspondent Saga Megani has more on this story.
I have some good news.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the agreement would extend the debt ceiling into early December.
And it's our hope that we can get this done as soon as today.
That would temporarily end a standoff over lifting the nation's borrowing cap. GOP Chief Mitch McConnell was ready to block a longer-term suspension of the debt ceiling before offering a short-term fix last night.
The Senate is moving toward the plan I laid out yesterday to spare the American people a manufactured crisis.
The agreement comes after President Biden and business leaders warned of a pending catastrophe if the nation defaulted on its debt. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
The Central Intelligence Agency says that it's creating a top-level working group on China. AP's Ben Thomas reports.
CIA Director William Burns calls China the most important geopolitical threat of the 21st century. Now the agency is creating a China Mission Center, part of a broad government effort focused on countering Beijing's influence. The Biden administration has warned of what it describes as rising Chinese aggression on a range of security and economic issues. At the same time, it sought common ground with Beijing on issues like climate change and North Korea. The CIA says it will ramp up efforts to recruit Chinese speakers. It's also creating a mission center focusing on emerging technologies in global issues such as climate change and global health. Ben Thomas, Washington.
And as winter season approaches, health experts are urging Americans not to forget about the flu during the COVID-19 pandemic. AP's Saga Megani joins us again with more on this story.
Health experts are urging Americans not to forget about the flu during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I get it. We are all tired about talking about vaccines.
But even as she keeps pushing people to get the COVID vaccines, CDC Chief Rochelle Walensky tells the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases flu shots are doubly important this year.
The low level of flu activity last season could set us up for a severe season this year.
Things like masking and social distancing helped slow the spread of respiratory diseases last year, but officials are worried because a virus called RSV that usually hits young kids in the winter came roaring back in the summer as masks started coming off. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
A federal judge in Austin, Texas has ordered the state to suspend its controversial abortion law. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
A federal judge in Austin, Texas orders the state to suspend its controversial abortion law. Federal District Judge Robert Pittman calls a Texas law that bans most abortions in the state an unprecedented statutory scheme to deprive women of their constitutional right to an abortion. Pittman adding that the moment the law went into effect last month, women were unlawfully prevented from exercising control over their lives. The law, known as SB 8, signed by Republican Governor Greg Abbott, prohibits abortions once cardiac activity is detected, which is usually around 6 weeks before some women even know they're pregnant. It It also deputizes private citizens to sue abortion providers with the promise of at least $10,000 in damages if successful. It's one of several GOP-sponsored state laws that are part of the strongest challenge to abortion rights in decades. Abbott's administration is expected to appeal Pittman's ruling. I'm Tim McGuire.
European Union leaders fail to overcome divisions on whether to develop an independent defense force, despite anger at the chaotic withdrawal of Western forces from Afghanistan and new impetus from France after it was excluded from the U.S., British and Australian Security Pact. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
The chaotic withdrawal of Western forces from Afghanistan is still troubling for many U.S. allies. And at a summit of European Union leaders this week, the problem has been laid bare. The EU is divided over the bloc's reliance on the United States for its defense strategy. Reuters diplomatic sources say that the EU has failed to resolve their debate over whether to develop an independent defense force. Leaders meeting over dinner in Slovenia on Tuesday spits rather predictably into eastern states fearful of Russia, who want to strengthen Europe within NATO, and those led by Germany, Italy, Spain and France, who want a more robust EU capability. Before the closed-door meetings in Bordeaux Castle, French President Emmanuel Macron told reporters that the 27 nations bloc must do more to manage crises on its borders and to be responsible for its own security. He had questioned the reliability of the US's protection of Europe prior to last month's dispute over an Indo-Pacific pact, which has added fuel to the fire. The diplomatic crisis was triggered after the United States negotiated a military accord in secret, known as AUKUS, tightening its military cooperation with Australia and Britain to counter China, but excluding France. The EU leaders are also being joined by six Balkan leaders, part of the bloc's decades-long strategy to create a ring of friends from southeastern Europe to North Africa. Proponents of a stronger EU defence say the warnings have been many, including Washington's so-called pivot to Asia during the Obama administration, Britain's departure from the bloc, and the Trump administration's America First policies. But despite progress on building a common defense fund to develop weapons together, the EU has yet to deploy its battalion-sized battle groups in a crisis.
Tanzanian writer Abdulrazak Gana has been awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. The Swedish Academy said Thursday the award was in recognition of his uncompromising and compassionate penetration of the effects of colonialism. Born in Zanzibar in 1948 and based in England, Gana is a professor at the University of Kent. He's also author of 10 novels, including Paradise, which was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 1994. The prestigious award comes with a gold medal and 10 million Swedish kroner, which is a little over $1 million. Reuters' David Doyle has more.
Tanzanian novelist Abdulrazak Gurnah has won the 2021 Nobel Prize in Literature.
For his uncompromising and compassionate penetration of the effects of colonialism and the fates of the refugee in the gulf between cultures and continents.
I came by air.
Gurnah described receiving the award as brilliant and wonderful. The 72-year-old said it was such a complete surprise that he had to wait to hear the announcement before he believed it.
I wasn't desperate, but I was very frightened because I had made some people very angry with me.
Born in Zanzibar, Gurnah left Africa in the 1960s. That was during the persecution of citizens of Arab origin under President Abed Karume's regime in Zanzibar. Gurnah was only able to return to Zanzibar in 1984. His works include Paradise, set in colonial East Africa during the First World War, which was shortlisted for the Booker Prize for Fiction. Anders Olsson, head of the Swedish Academy Nobel Committee, said since that novel's publication, Gurnah has been widely regarded as one of the world's most prominent post-colonial writers.
In his 10 novels, he has consistently and with great compassion penetrated the effects of colonialism in East Africa and its effects on the lives of uprooted and migrating individuals.
His selection for the top honor comes at a time of global tensions around migration, as millions across the world flee poverty and violence. Olsson said the committee's choice was not a response to recent headlines.
Because
The phenomenon of exile and migration has been there for many, many years.
Gurna, who is based in Britain, is the first African writer to win the award since Zimbabwean Doris Lessing in 2007. He's also only the second writer of colour from sub-Saharan Africa, after Nigeria's Wale Soyinka, who won in 1986.
Voice of America!
UN monitors probing Cambodia's human rights situation say increasing government repression against political opponents and civic activists is stifling people's fundamental freedoms. The report has been submitted to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte's war on drugs has claimed thousands of lives. Official government figures last year put that number at nearly 6,000. Human rights organizations claim more than 20,000 have been killed since 2016, largely by the country's security forces. UN Rights Chief Bachelet notes some small measures are being taken to prevent extrajudicial killings. These include the mandatory use of body-worn cameras and alternative recording devices in police operations. Despite these steps, she says she continues to receive disturbing reports of severe human rights violations and abuses, including killings by security forces and police in counter-narcotics and counter-insurgency operations.
Killings by alleged vigilantes also continue to be reported, with virtually no information about any form of accountability. We have also received reports of abuses by the New People's Army of the Communist Party of Philippines, including the killing of civilians, recruitment of children, and extortion.
Bachelet condemns the harassment, threats, and killings of human rights defenders and other activists. She says security forces and other violators rarely are held accountable for these crimes.
I remain deeply concerned by continued report of so-called red tagging of human rights and environmental defenders, journalists, union activists, church workers, and humanitarian workers, publicly labeling them as communists with a view to discrediting their human rights work and encouraging attacks against them.
The High Commissioner is calling on all sides to end the ugly rhetoric that is putting the lives and well-being of civic activists at risk. She says attacks against independent media, condoning extrajudicial killings, and other violations and abuses must stop. She notes this is especially important now as the Philippines heads into an election year when political rhetoric can turn into violence. The Philippines presidential and vice presidential elections will be held next May as part of the country's general elections. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And still in the Philippines, Vice President Leni Robredo has declared that she will run for president in May 2022, joining a crowded field of candidates to succeed populist incumbent President Rodrigo Duterte. While she's not the leading candidate, based on current surveys, Robredo is hoping to replicate her come-from-behind 2016 victory in an election reshaped by the COVID-19 pandemic. Reporter Stanley Buenafe Gayete has more from Manila.
Since October 1, the Philippines Commission on Elections accepted certificates of candidacy of 41 candidates for presidential position, 9 for vice president, 63 candidates for senators, and 125 party list nominees. The voters' registration was extended until October 30 due to the number of Filipinos who were not able to register because of the COVID-19 pandemic. With less than 7 months before the 2022 elections, the United States government is warning the Filipinos of a possible tsunami of disinformation and the pandemic dampening voter enthusiasm, which could possibly threaten both the conduct of the polls and the Philippine democracy in general. John Groch, incoming public affairs chief of the U.S. Embassy in Manila, said in a press conference that the democracy is called into question with informed voting undermined by disinformation and voters potentially opting out because they are afraid for their own health. But the democracy should not be compromised.
These are challenging times for elections worldwide, not just in the Philippines, but across the world and particularly across democratic societies. In his inaugural address, which some of you may have seen, President Biden talked about democracy as being precious and fragile. And he's right. All over the world, including in both of our countries, both the Philippines and the U.S., long-standing commitments to democracy are being challenged. by appeals to authoritarianism. So that it's not just candidates who are running in elections, but it's actually democracy itself.
For Grotsch, those challenges to democracy are actually being abetted by deliberate attempts to undermine not just the truth, but in fact, deliberate attempts to undermine our very ability to ascertain what is true.
Disinformation that traffics in lies and discredits those who tell the truth, including scientists, academics, and, yes, journalists.
But Grotsch explained that through correct and transparent reporting, media outlets could help stabilize the democratic system.
Recent survey results released by Senate Majority Leader Zviri showed that only 35% of Filipinos are going to be willing to cast their ballots if COVID-19 cases remain high in their community. That's not a great recipe for democracy. And this is where the media comes in, because journalists play a crucial role in ensuring the conduct of safe and credible elections. That's where the media's responsibility to inform and educate citizens becomes so important.
Grotsch, using his lens, said it's important to empower the media to accurately and freely report on election-related issues because elections are a hallmark of a democratic process.
Democracy cannot succeed unless those who express their choice are prepared to choose wisely. It's vital to equip journalists through programs like this and others so that we can have a positive impact on the voting public.
For VOA News, I am Stanley Buenafegaete in Manila, Philippines.
Campaigners are accusing Australia of disgracefully deserting refugees after Canberra said that it would end the offshore processing of migrants in neighboring Papua New Guinea. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
More than 3,000 asylum seekers have been held in Papua New Guinea under Canberra's 2013 offshore policy that barred any migrant trying to reach Australia by sea from resettlement. About 1,200 have been transferred temporarily to Australia, often for medical treatment. The rest have either been sent back home or granted visas to other countries, including the United States. Rights groups have repeatedly called the offshore processing of migrants a violation of international law. Australian authorities have said the policy has stopped many asylum seekers risking their lives trying to reach its territorial waters on unseaworthy boats. Papua New Guinea is one of two Pacific countries paid by Canberra to detain asylum seekers and refugees. The two governments said Wednesday the agreement would conclude at the end of the year. The decision leaves 124 migrants in Papua New Guinea. Officials said they could either stay or move to the tiny Pacific Republic of Nauru, which is Australia's last remaining offshore detention centre. Ian Rintoul, a spokesperson for the Refugee Action Coalition, a community activist organisation, says Nauru is poorly placed to care for migrants.
There is also a big question over Nauru. I mean, the fact is the vast majority of people who were on Nauru are now in Australia. The circumstances in Nauru simply don't provide, you know, security and certainty for anyone who is sent there. The government in Nauru still struggles to be able to provide the kind of medical services that are increasingly becoming necessary for the people who have been the victims of long-term detention.
Papua New Guinea has been trying to end its involvement in Australia's offshore processing system for years. An Australian-run detention facility on Papua New Guinea's Manus Island was found to be illegal by the country's Supreme Court in 2016. Australia has reaffirmed its commitment to its offshore processing policy. In a joint statement with Papua New Guinea, it said that anyone who attempts to enter Australia illegally by boat will be returned or sent to Nauru. The tiny Pacific Republic of Nauru has a coastline of just 30 kilometres and is home to about 10,000 people. Asylum seekers who arrive in Australia by plane, a much larger number than those who come by boat, aren't subject to offshore processing. Immigration Minister Alex Hawke said last month Canberra has one of the world's most generous humanitarian resettlement schemes, allocating visas to about 13,700 refugees each year. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And in other news, the UN Human Rights Council shut down its investigation into war crimes committed in Yemen. The vote, pushed by Bahrain, Russia, and other members of the council, was a defeat for Western states who wanted to keep the mission going. It marked the first time in the council's 15-year history that a resolution was defeated. The independent investigators have said in the past that potential war crimes have been committed by all sides in the 7-year conflict that has pitted a Saudi-led coalition against Iran-allied Houthi rebels. For more on this story and other breaking global news, visit our website at voanews.com. And while there, check out our other programs, including our podcasts from shows like Upfront, television shows like Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and others. And remember to connect with us on our social media platforms, including YouTube, our YouTube channel where you can watch our videos. Just search for VOA Africa on YouTube. You can also connect with the International Edition Twitter at VOA_IE. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. The 2021 winners of the Nobel Prizes in Physiology or Medicine, Physics and Chemistry were announced this week. The new Nobel laureates will receive their prizes in Stockholm in December. Rick Pantaleo joins us in this edition of Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
The 2021 winners of the Nobel Prizes were announced recently. According to the Nobel Prize Organization, this year's winner in physiology or medicine was awarded to David Julius and Artem Patapushin for discoveries of receptors for temperature and touch. The physics award went to Sakuro Manabe and Klaus Hesselmann for the physical modeling of Earth's climate, quantifying variability, and reliably predicting global warming. And Giorgio Parisi for the discovery of the interplay of disorder and fluctuations in physical systems from atomic to planetary scales. And the Nobel Prize in Chemistry was awarded to Benjamin List and David McMillan for discovering a new tool for constructing molecules. The Nobel laureates will receive their prizes in a ceremony that will be held in Sweden on December 10th. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Many health workers from Zimbabwe migrate to South Africa in search of employment and improved pay, but their hope for a better life in their Southern African neighbor may be at risk. There are indications that South Africa's Public Health Directorate is turning away applicants from Zimbabwe. Adigondo has more on this story.
South African authorities have apparently begun to reject applications by health workers from Zimbabwe on grounds that its neighbor is currently facing a staffing crisis due to migration. The letter is in VOA's possession and signed by Sindile Sotlala, the Departmental Director of Workplace Management, to some of the rejected applicants. It explains that the government of South Africa is obliged to adhere to all the relevant protocols between member states of the Southern African Development Community, the African Union, as well as the World Health Organization as it pertains to the recruitment of health professionals from developing countries. The letter adds that the agreements and protocols include a provision that prevents and controls the recruitment of health professionals from countries with public health systems facing huge staff shortages. Observers affirm that Zimbabwe is faced with massive staff migration of healthcare professionals due to poor working conditions and long-standing pay disputes with the government. Nurses currently net $23,226 or US$226 on the official exchange of around 87 to the dollar. But economic analysts and observers say that in reality, nurses earn US$136 using the parallel market rate of around 170 Zim dollars to the US dollar. Enoch Dongo of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association, ZNA, concurs that the authorities are ignoring the plight of nurses, leaving them with no option but to leave the country.
There is a quite number of nurses that are moving from Zimbabwe to other countries. The figures has been doubled compared to last year. The nurses' salaries are the one of the lowest paid in Southern Africa and as well as in the world as a whole. And now with the coming in of COVID and the demand of nurses around the world, we have seen countries like USA, UK, Ireland, Australia, and other countries recruiting more and more experienced nurses. And this has left a huge gap in our public hospitals where
Dongo says while the situation is poised to be dire with the loss of highly experienced staff to other countries, nurses are not complaining.
We are much worried about that. But for the nurses, it's a welcome development and a good move for them, for their welfare and their families, since they are moving from Zimbabwe to other countries where they are being recognized, where they are being given salaries which can take care of themselves and their families. Hence, we are urging our government to relook at the remunerations of nurses, to relook at the working in, conditions and the environment where the nurses are working, and improve on those. It's going to be a crisis soon because we have seen even tutors, those who are training nurses, they are leaving the country, and other senior nurses whom we used to know that these are the people that are really there to give guidance to the juniors. But because of the economical hardships that they are facing, they are leaving the
Still, the migration southward seems to be facing challenges. VOA reached out to the Zimbabwe South Africa Association, which works with other bodies such as the Zimbabwe Migrant Workers Association in South Africa, for their take on the development with the South African authorities. Mabuto Mabena is a leader of the organization and chairperson of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa.
The letter that is said to be coming from the South African Minister of Health is as a result of a SADC protocol, which was entered into by SADC member states. So our understanding is that South Africa is implementing that protocol. But we also know that South Africa recognizes the reality that you have a migration within the region, and that migration is a global phenomenon. It has then sought to manage migration.
According to Mabena, South Africa reviewed its policy on international migration in 2015 and in 2017 published a white paper on international migration. He says he hopes that the proposals on migration contained in the report that are before the South African Parliament will be adopted by the legislative body. Others say the white paper only referred to unskilled labor and not to professionals such as healthcare workers. But analysts say that given the economic shrinkage, heavy job losses in South Africa's own economy and impending elections, it may not be politically prudent for the ruling ANC to be implementing measures seen as taking away jobs from locals. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
California icons Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, and Kendrick Lamar, along with Mary J. Blige and Eminem, will perform at the Super Bowl halftime in February of 2022. The celebration of West Coast hip-hop in one of music's most visible gigs is fitting for the first Super Bowl to be played in Los Angeles in nearly three decades. The halftime show is among pop's most coveted slots. You may recall that in 2019, the NFL tapped Jay-Z to steer its musical performances, which the league held as a move to promote social justice. Music mogul Dr. Dre has produced albums for each performer in the lineup, with Eminem and Lamar both signed to the producer's Aftermath Entertainment label. And with that, we come to the end of our show today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great weekend.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say, we all,
can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease.